I'll be honest. Once it gets hot out, I'm not trying to overthink outfits. I want something that's comfortable, breathable, and still looks like I tried a little bit. That's where Quince is coming for me, and I absolutely love their 100% linen drawstring pants with the matching short sleeve button down that I just got from Quince. Guys, it's exactly the kind of thing I want in the summer. Super easy to throw on, doesn't feel stiff, it doesn't feel heavy, it's breathable, and it looks clean without being too dressed up. It's basically vacation energy without looking like you packed in 5 minutes, and you can have that vacation energy all summer long at home as well. Quince does high quality essentials without the luxury markup. We're talking linens, organic cotton, tees, lightweight sweaters, all the stuff that you actually wear. Their European linen pants and shirts are a great warm weather upgrade, and the price is right. They're starting at just $34, and pricing is a big part of it. Everything at Quince is 50 to 80% less than similar brands because they work directly with ethical factories and cut out the middleman. So you're paying for quality, not just the logo. And they go way beyond clothing. You've heard me talk about how much I love the Quince website. They have bedding, cookware, sofas. It's one of those sites where you go for one thing and end up staying for many more. Elevate your summer wardrobe. Go to quince.com/crypto101 for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/crypto101 for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/crypto101. When we started this podcast, it seemed like we had to figure it all out on our own. Scripts, setup, filming, schedules, logos. It was super overwhelming, and every day seemed to introduce a new decision that needed an answer. When you're starting off with something new, it seems like your to-do list keeps growing every day with new tasks, and that list can easily begin to overrun your life. Finding the right tools that not only helps you out, but simplifies everything can be a game changer. For millions of businesses, that tool is Shopify. Shopify is the e-commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world and 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. From household names like us at Crypt Nation and the Crypto 101 podcast, where you can get our book and merch, to brands that are just getting started. Get started with your own design studio with hundreds of ready-to-use templates. Shopify helps you build a beautiful online store that matches your brand style. Accelerate your efficiency, whether you're uploading new products or trying to improve existing ones. Shopify is packed with helpful AI tools that write product descriptions, page headlines, and even enhance your product photography. Get the word out like you have a marketing team behind you. Easily create email and social media campaigns wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling. And best yet, Shopify is your commerce expert with world-class expertise in everything from managing inventory to international shipping to processing returns and beyond. Start your business today with the industry's best business partner, Shopify, and start hearing... Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/crypto101. Go to shopify.com/crypto101. That's shopify.com/crypto101. All right, everybody. Welcome back to another crypto rundown. There is a market sell-off going on. Tech is down. Bitcoin is down. There are some high-flying downward stocks today in the AI trade. A little bit of a momentum unwind. Bitcoin taking it a little bit on the chin itself was down, 24 hours, down 3.5%. So we're going to break that all down. But along with the price action, there is a little bit of a clear window of some new news that we want to cover with you guys today. Again, the fundamentals keep building behind the crypto markets. We know the AI trade, the momentum was flying high. There is a downdraft today in this market sell-off. So we're going to gather it up. We're going to pull up the charts. We're going to pull up CoinMarketCap. And we're going to break down the news for you all in this, 40 minutes with my friend Brian. Brian, welcome to the show. Hope you had a good weekend. We got a little bit of the chat going on. Holy Whale, Julian Legend, Matt Beavers. Welcome, guys. Anybody else that jumps in, let us know where you're from. Brian, welcome to the show. Fun little Tuesday for us.
I mean, I'll tell you what, and you know exactly where I'm going with this. It's he snuck a little piece of information in right before we went live here. That's the big guy's birthday today. It's TiVo's birthday. We might be celebrating the market or not, or talking about the market, I should say. But this rundown should be pretty much just the TiVo show centered all around you. He snuck it in on me just a few minutes ago, everyone. I am absolutely floored. 29 has never looked so good.
That's true. Just a hint under 30 for anybody that's asking. But also don't ask for my license either. Thank you, Brian. Appreciate it. Yeah, I didn't even sneak it in. I think the company Slack let you aware, and your response was, "Whoa, TiVo, happy birthday." Appreciate it.
This guy doesn't sleep, everybody. Like, let's just really honor what's happening here. He was on the road last week. I'm watching him in his, I think it was his parents' basement at one point. He's there. He's firing it up. His internet connection going in and out. Or maybe that was a couple weeks ago. But he's back. And lights on. And it's his freaking birthday. Deliver him from the people.
No sleep is an understatement. I think in the last 10 days, Oregon to Delaware to Atlantic City to Virginia Beach Sunday night in front of 18,000 at that concert. I was helping make some fun little content for on the weekend. But there's nowhere else I'd rather be. I'm a man of the people. I love doing this. We say it all the time. We appreciate all the listeners and all the community members. So for your birthday, what else would I rather do? I love doing the rundowns. Love the team. Love you, Brian. Super fun. And thank you for the birthday wishes coming in. I see them. Thank you guys so much. Another year older, another year wiser, thus better crypto trading this year, no doubt. So let's jump into it. We'll pull up CoinMarketCap here. Again, a little bit of a red. It just feels like one of those days where there's a little bit of an unwind. I saw the momentum trade was going down. We'll talk about SpaceX a little bit later in the show. That hit its new IPO high and has been trading lower over the last couple days. And look, set the 7-day for the 20, the coin market cap 20 at 6% down, Bitcoin about 6%, Ethereum a little more at 8. Some Ethereum news we're going to cover. Overall, the market action, not super sexy. We'll pull up the, don't share that. Let's share this. Fear and greed is sitting at about 20, it says. So again, it's just one of those times. It's like it feels like sell in May and go away is in full effect, especially for crypto. It's just in that holding pattern waiting on the Clarity Act and kind of seeing what the rules of the road are. So but with that said, there's a lot of fundamentals underneath the market we're going to talk about. But Brian, I'll hand it off to you as we stare at the 20 just on the cusp of extreme fear once again. What are you feeling with the price action before we jump into the fundamentals?
Yeah, I mean, a 20 feels about right. You know, I opened up the CoinMarketCap first thing this morning, and I closed it pretty quickly after squinting a little bit. And it's not surprising. I've been saying in some market updates, we've said on some rundowns that it does feel like we're going to kind of chop in this zone for a little while. It's summertime, the dog days of crypto. We're waiting for the Clarity Act. The Strait of Hormuz is open. The Strait of Hormuz is closed. Currently, I'm not even exactly sure what the status is out there, and I don't even really want to know because it'll probably change in an hour. And it feels about right. Obviously, institutions, long-term, or some buyers are there. I'm still as bullish as ever on the crypto market and blockchain, but we're gonna have some up and downs here. It doesn't surprise me that we're peeling back a little bit. Let's see how far we actually drip here. But it's pretty accurate. I mean, it doesn't feel like all is lost or anybody should be overly concerned. It's just one of those days. Maybe we're in it, dude. You and I, I'm following this price. I'm looking for the best opportunities every single day. But, you know, normal retail investors, people that are just doing this, you know, in their spare time, I don't blame them if they just want to touch a little bit of grass. You know, they want to look the other way. Because there's a lot of catalysts we're waiting for. So this feels about right. It just is what it is. No real, I'm not sounding the alarm. I've told everybody on the rundown, like, if I ever lose faith or there's some major concern, this would be the first place I would say it. I'm as bullish as ever where we're going in the future. But the market, you know, it's choppy and it's going to probably stay choppy.
Yeah, and I think we've covered that on multiple levels with the price action with me and you talking. We've had Brendan on doing the charts. We're going to do that again on Friday with Hunter. I think we're going to do a Brendan Hunter special, first ever. So it'll be interesting to get some, some different takes. That's what I love about this show, is bringing on our different analysts and personalities to get different thoughts. We can look at the charts with Brendan and Hunter and see what, you know, what they think. Maybe some of the same opinions, maybe some different. So that'll be an awesome episode on Friday. And then, I agree. It's just, you know, we've kind of said it technically. There doesn't seem to be a catalyst to the upside to break through that resistance quite yet. We've been in this 60 range. You know, again, eventually the range will break. Does it break to the upside or the downside? Nobody knows. Anybody guaranteeing one or the other is lying to you. But we kind of know what the game is at this point. It's preserving capital. It's understanding that, you know, hey, this price is a solid for long term if you've done your research. Again, not personal financial advice, but I think so. And again, if it goes lower, great. We, you know, you got to make sure you have some capital. If it goes higher, you can play the breakout. And we've kind of taught you along the way, you know, hey, the fundamentals are hot, but the technicals aren't. So if you kind of see those two pair back in lockstep, then you got some brighter days ahead. But we're just not quite there yet. So not personal financial advice, but I did turn this on a couple weeks ago. I think I can't remember if I mentioned it on here or not. But I did do the, I just did the automatic weekly buys for Bitcoin, flipped it on. Not thinking about it, small, you know, again, just a schmeckle each week, nothing crazy. Cause again, yeah, it's sprinkles. We're sprinkling right now. And, you know, I think long-term, this is where you want to accumulate. And I also don't think I'm alone. And I'm glad I did this a couple weeks ago, cause this is the stat that I love to see. See, we brought this stat up, flip side. It was around 100K when we said, hey, a lot of long-term Bitcoin holders started to sell. And that was kind of like an interesting, like, hey, this is we've covered this on the show a lot. It was a changing of the guard. It was like, hey, these long-term holders, they made an unbelievable amount of money. They found their price and they're handing over their Bitcoin to, you know, the ETFs and the people that want to buy. And it's a new generation of Bitcoin holders almost. And so they sold and now it seems like they're coming back. So the data starts to show that this cohort that took profit at the top is starting to accumulate on the decline. So it'll be interesting to follow this stat. But again, these are the whales that have been around for a long time. So if you can entice them to jump back in, I think that's an interesting and positive sign.
You know what slows teams down more than anything? It's not always headcount, budget, or even the tools themselves. It's when the way work gets done lives in someone's head and never actually gets documented. Then someone new joins, a new platform gets rolled out, or a teammate leaves and suddenly everyone's doing the same process in a different way. That's exactly the problem today's sponsor, Scribe, was built to solve. Scribe is a workflow AI platform that captures any workflow in real time and turns it into a step-by-step documentation automatically. You just turn on the extension, do the process like you normally would, and Scribe builds the guide as you go, capturing every click, step, and screenshot. And it's already trusted by over 80,000 enterprises, including nearly half of the Fortune 500. With our team being remote, I have definitely had moments where I've had to explain the same setup or process more than once to a colleague, and it always feels like something that should have been documented the first time. With Scribe, what could take hours of writing, screenshots, and cleanup can be ready to share in under a minute. Scribe also automatically redacts sensitive information like names, emails, and account numbers from screenshots. Admins can enforce that across the team so nothing slips through the cracks. Plus, anyone following the process can get real-time on-screen guidance showing exactly where to click inside the actual tool. And Scribe doesn't just document workflows. It uses AI to suggest ways to improve them, helping you spot redundant steps, bottlenecks, and places to simplify. To book a personalized enterprise demo, visit scribe.how/crypto101. That's scribe.how/crypto101. Are you curious about the economic forces shaping your daily life? The Planet Money podcast from NPR makes sense of the economy in ways you'll actually understand and enjoy. Guys, you love listening to the rundowns. I get some of that information from this NPR Planet Money podcast, especially recently with the war going on, the Strait of Hormuz. You're just kind of getting those updates as they come from these guys. They put out a ton of awesome content. It's a different perspective from Crypto 101, but still a great listen. So go over there and check out the Planet Money podcast if stuff like current events and the finance world interest you. Each story on Planet Money starts with a question. Recent episodes ask why Pokemon cards are growing faster than your retirement account. Questions about the war, just like we talked about recently a lot on our program, from the job market to the stock market to prices at the supermarket.
Planet Money explains it all. Planet Money is a different kind of world where the complex economy somehow makes sense, where human stories supersede abstract theories so you can learn, laugh, and be entertained. It's econ, but just down to earth. The hosts go to unusual lengths to explain the economy. They've published their own book to track the global supply chain. They've shot a satellite into space to understand the economics of the private space industry. They've gone inside a live book auction to show how ideas get to market. It's the kind of show where you learn something, probably laugh, and walk away seeing the world a little differently. And I think if you like Crypto 101, you'll enjoy Planet Money. So maybe check that out. Follow NPR's Planet Money podcast and understand how money shapes the world. Quick question. Is your computer actually old, or is it just being dragged down by the stuff that's supposed to protect it? Because that's the part nobody really thinks about. A lot of traditional antivirus programs are heavy. They take up space, slow things down, throw pop-ups at you. And then you're sitting there blaming your laptop like, well, maybe it's time for a new one. But sometimes your device isn't the problem. Your antivirus is. And us being in crypto, we know that we need a top-tier antivirus program to keep our assets safe. That's why Webroot makes sense. Webroot is a cloud-based antivirus, so it's built to stay out of your way. It takes up to 33 times less space than bulky competitors and scans 6 times faster, so you're getting protection without your computer feeling like it's fighting for its life every time you open up a few tabs. And this matters more now because AI has changed the cybersecurity game. Phishing emails look more real, scams are getting smarter, and malware moves fast. So you need protection that can actually keep up. Webroot helps defend you in real time against malware, phishing, ransomware, and other threats. Whether you're working, browsing, streaming, or just trying to use your computer without it sounding like it's about to take off. For a limited time, you can save 60% on Webroot when you go to webroot.com/crypto101. That's 60% off today, but only when you go to webroot.com/crypto101.
Yeah, I mean, this is textbook supply tightening. Weak hands are exiting, and while strong hands are starting to absorb some of the supply. When the ETF or just the macro-driven demand returns, that available float's going to probably be a little bit thinner, man. So it does feel like it's a little bit like the beginning of a classic setup for volatility to the upside. I know we're leaking the wrong way, and we're in the summer here, but this is slightly bullish to me to see that some people are starting to get back in. Because they get back in before the masses. That's exactly what happens, and we're starting to see a little bit more sprinkling. And you might be sprinkling some dollar cost averaging as well. Actually, last week I started doing the same thing. I was like, you know, it certainly feels like this is a good time to just start, you know, slowly building a little bit more of my portfolio. Because before you know it, fingers crossed, at the right time in a few months from now, 6 months from now, we may be looking back and be like, man, remember when Bitcoin was 62K? Why didn't we full port? But this feels like a good time to start kind of dollar cost averaging in, not financial advice, but we're not alone. There's a lot of people doing it, it looks like.
Yeah, I think you got to, I think some people say you should write a trading diary. A lot of people do that. And so you can remember how you felt. And I remember the first time we were doing those, we were trying to break through 100, and there'd be nights you'd be sitting and there'd be that, you know, low volatility, 97, 98, 99. And then it broke through 100, 101, 102, 103. And you're sitting there excited, but you're also like, damn, I knew at 72 I wanted to buy more. I knew it. I knew that was we were going. And so you kind of remember those days. And again, things change all the time. You get new information. Obviously we've covered all the reasons of kind of Monday morning quarterback, what we think caused this market to nosedive a little bit, whether it's the cycle or the AI trade. But again, you got to do your research and come up with your continuation thesis of, is this where you want to be? And for me, it's kind of the portion of where we are in this price cycle for me is like, okay, I still believe in this long term. It doesn't feel good, but when you don't feel good, that's when you should, you know, sprinkle a little bit. And so, you know, you flip those on and you don't think about it. And you got to make sure that you're doing your risk analysis and making sure that you have dry powder for where we are in these volatile times. Because again, the momentum and stuff that I like to track with the general market is Bitcoin will get tied up in that again. So when you see SpaceX flying, you know, up 60, 70% and then unwinding, and then you have all these AI trades that we've covered a little bit from afar of like, hey, this is where the momentum is right now. You know, as that unwinds, I don't think that crypto will be immune to it, or if it unwinds totally. But also, I also think as it's just kind of like what we talk about. There's rotation of money. The money goes and it rotates. The money goes and it rotates. So it'll be interesting to cover what's going to happen next. But a good sign that the whales of old are buying. And there's still people that are coming out with some high-end price targets. I'll let you do this one as you put the link on the sheet. But Adam Back coming out and giving some insight.
Yeah, I mean, Adam Back's Blockstream CEO. I think he's Blockstream, and he's like the cyberpunk legend. I mean, you and I are saying, like, we're the perma bulls. We got some mics, and we're saying what we believe. But when a guy like Adam Back comes out and he says he thinks that Bitcoin could hit that $500,000 to $1 million mark, he's not just verbally vomiting on us, and he's saying that by, I think, 2028. There's some real justification there. That's high conviction from one of the Bitcoin's earliest and most respected figures. And he's not just calling a number. He's framing it as the natural outcome for Bitcoin catching up to gold's market cap and institutional flows. And it's credible, long-term bullish framing. And I think he's one of those guys that we have to really listen when he speaks. And I believe this is a clip that, you know, he sounds pretty sharp here of why he's saying this.
Sure, let's take a look. We can, it's 2 minutes long. Maybe we won't listen to the whole thing. Looks like this guy's teeing him up for a question. So we'll jump in 18 seconds here and check out what he has to say.
Next 4 years for Bitcoin to reach a million in 2030.
Not much. I mean, I think just the market dynamic could do it with the current demand almost, right? I think this halving period so far, in my view, could have done that. Just from the, you know, new retail interests and new ETFs, even without the institutions. So we'll see how it evolves. You know, people are sort of have short memories, so they forget the previous halving cycle had three tops. So you had like a 64,000, a 69,000, and then a bit of a bear period, and then 73.5 right before the halving. So, you know, here we are. We're about the time of the first two tops. You know, maybe we'll get another one, right, in this cycle. So who knows? It's and as you said, you know, there are new types of buyers in the market now, and people can only sell once. You get this kind of consolidation phase where, you know, some people are leaving and some new stronger hands are absorbing the Bitcoin.
So what you?
Interesting, he says. I like that you can only sell once. I guess especially if you sell all of your bag, right? You can only sell once. So looking for some consolidation here. Interesting point of that transitional hands of who has the bags now, of kind of like what we said. The old hands were trading to the new hands. Now the new, you know, not all the new hands, but seemingly so, as we've covered with especially the outflows of the ETFs. Some shaky hands there, and then seemingly with the on-chain data here, some old whales buying back. So. Positive momentum, if you will, at least news flow wise, for some Bitcoin consolidation and long-term holds. And then he also had a take about strategy as well, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, he basically is calling out strategy because what they were about the Bitcoin sale, and he just kind of mentioned why he thought that wasn't as the market reacted in too big of a negative fashion for that 32 Bitcoin sale, which I agree. And he's basically calling it out, and directly him basically calling it out basically is removing a lot of that FUD. It's really a neutral take on it, but I thought it was really interesting that he addressed this as well, because Saylor and strategy has become such a focal point and a spotlight of this cycle. And you see him sell just a minimal amount of Bitcoin, and the market did not like it. It's interesting to see a guy like Adam Back really address it. I mean, Adam Back at one point, and still is mentioned to be one of more commonly people associated with actually being Satoshi. So this isn't just some guy that's out there, you know, pushing his bags or trying to get involved. I really respect what he says, and so I thought it was a really interesting take here. And he's just basically saying that the strategy Bitcoin sale is not as bearish as everyone thinks. And I agree with it, but I understand the market reaction. And it's interesting to just see him bring it up on live TV.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and then some news strategy, selling more shares, 335 million, and acquiring 520 more Bitcoin at an average price of 67,000. So yet another buy where Saylor's a little underwater on already.
Yeah,
trading down 62.
You know, You know what was interesting here, though, is what, 35 million of that went to Bitcoin, but I think 300 of it of the so he's selling strategy. It looks like right. 300 million of that went to cash. So he's going to have 300 million bucks. We've kind of talked about that. Like, how's he going to cover these dividends? Where's he going to get this cash? So it does look like he's chosen his horse. He's not going to be selling any Bitcoin anymore in the near future, at least to cover some of these cash obligations. So it does look like he has about $300 million more in cash. And it, whenever this was announced, it was a day or two ago, it did seem like the market did like this, that, you know, he's prepping possibly to just have cash on hand. So again, Strategy and Sailor are doing what Strategy and Sailor does, but I think it's really encouraging to see that, you know, he stockpiled a little bit of cash this go.
Yeah, that is good to see. I'm sure that calms the nerves after that little bit of selling. You know, something to watch is as this financial alchemy continues, how much cash they have on their balance sheet when they report earnings for MicroStrategy is going to be a huge focal point of kind of guessing, you know, what and how they can do to fund that dividend. But BlackRock, some positive speak. Obviously, you could say a little bit of talking their bags, but we played a clip. Can't remember if you on or if it was with Brendan of Rick Rieder, the CIO of BlackRock, saying some positive things about Bitcoin as well. But being honest and saying, hey, there's other things I'm looking at, but long term, you know, this is a part of our portfolio. BlackRock saying some renewed upside around midterm elections. You know, obviously they're probably talking their book a little bit with also looking into maybe the Clarity Act getting through. We're going to cover that in the show later, but always good to hear some positive things from BlackRock.
Yeah, I mean, this is just more instant. I mean, they have bags, you know, we get that. And, you know, of course, they're going to probably talk positive about this, but I think there's a lot of smart people behind this, and it's institutional validation that Bitcoin can be a premier macro hedge against the U.S. fiscal irresponsibility. You know, it's that whole digital gold story. We haven't seen that completely unfold the way we expected it this go around, but it's another layer of professional conviction from the largest asset manager in the world. And it makes sense because in the midterms, it historically creates volatility with policy and in just overall the political environment. And we could see some, I like this take. I think Bitcoin could have a little bit of a turnaround when this midterm comes around. We're going to have to see how everything shakes out, but I really do like this take.
Yeah, and I'll just pull this up now, the Clarity Act. So looking like Congress scheduled a hearing for the Clarity Act on July 17th. Again, that's good. The subcommittee fields hearing, building the future of finance, how the Clarity Act unlocks innovation. So this is more progress of education to the people that are going to apparently vote on this stuff. So it looks like a little bit more momentum. I wouldn't say, I guess we could pull up the Poly Market odds while we're here. I don't think this would be necessarily market moving. Have you seen the Poly Market Clarity Act odds recently since we last
Not since the rundown, but I'm going to guess. I'm going to say 46%.
Not bad. 43.
That's my guess.
Keeps dipping.
Ooh. 43. I mean, I get it. I do like to use prediction markets on like how things are going, but obviously the market really doesn't know. We've seen this thing as high as 75%. And as low as under 30. It's again, I think the Clarity Act is the single biggest unlock for mainstream institutional and corporate capital. Even with the delay from the earlier hopes, the fact that it's still progressing and showing bipartisan momentum is big. Clear rules will reduce risk premiums and enable bigger balance sheet allocations, and there'll just be more liquidity that gets unlocked. Again, I think it's huge as this Clarity Act happens this year. I think it's going to happen, but man, we talk about it all the time. Just talk about wait until the last minute.
Yeah, it's always, I guess it was always going to be a sweat. So we'll keep checking on.
We've been there.
We like a good
sweat. The light's still on. I didn't even see a flicker back there, so I'm still feeling pretty good.
It's true. Light's always on, baby. Some interesting news out of Franklin Templeton, which you knew about if you listened to the recent episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. They've acquired 250 Digital, and they're going to be launching Franklin Crypto. So you want to make sure that you go, if you have not, Let me pull up the exact, where are my notes here? It was episode 728. I think it was a week or two ago. So EP, episode 728 with Chris Perkins. And Chris Perkins, it was the CEO of 250 Digital that got acquired, and he will now be heading Franklin Crypto. So we had a conversation with him before the news fully, I mean, it was kind of known that it was happening, but before the transaction fully went through and the announcement today, we had an interview with Chris, who's going to be running the Franklin Crypto division. So go back and listen to episode 728 with Brendan and Bryce as they interviewed Chris Perkins. But again, Franklin Templeton just continuing to build within the crypto ecosystem. I think we pulled it up. I went and got some specifics on this. We talked about how they're filing, Franklin Templeton's filing for a U.S. equity Bitcoin DRIP ETF. And so the idea of the DRIP ETF is there's going to be a holding of stocks, and then all the dividend from those stocks is going to be invested into Bitcoin. And so I found some of the specifics. So it's going to be 95% stocks, 5% Bitcoin to start, and then the dividends are going to be invested into Bitcoin only. And then there's a hard cap of 20% Bitcoin. So it's kind of going to be like a little bit of an actively managed fund. In theory, when Bitcoin rises, as you accumulate Bitcoin through the dividends, as Bitcoin rises, if the balance of that gets to 20%, then they will start selling the Bitcoin to, I guess, reinvest into the stocks or raise some cash. So I actually thought that was a pretty cool, unique, for all the products that are going out there and the financial alchemy, as we like to call it. I thought that was a cool idea.
Yeah, it's great to see them get a little bit creative. And I think the earliest possible launch for this is sometime in September and still need some like full SEC approval. But it's great to see that some of these, you know, big players are thinking outside of the box. And you love to see them acquiring Bitcoin. We need more headlines like this. We need more attention over there because institutions are still fully vested in blockchain and Bitcoin. So I think it's, you know, a bullish side of things.
Mm-hmm. Agree. Now, I guess we'll see what the take is here. I'll hand it off to you first. Bullish or not, a couple takes around Ethereum here. So the Ethereum Foundation announces a new structure that will be cutting 20% of its workforce. Thought that was quite interesting. And then Vitalik had a book-long tweet here, one of those ones where you kind of scroll and you're like, congrats or sorry. But the summary of it is, or sorry that happened to you, because the summary of it is the Ethereum Foundation budget is being cut. And we've talked about how they've been selling their ETH. They're now getting a tighter team. I don't know, Brian, what are your thoughts here? We have some other news that we'll get to next that's maybe a little bit more bullish, but this doesn't seem good for the foundation.
You could look at this in a couple of different ways. You know, off the cuff, sure, it's painful short term, you know, but it does feel like it's a little necessary to mature, trimming overhead and refocusing on the core protocol, that scaling, usability, the L1 improvements is the right move. And a more efficient Ethereum Foundation that delivers this faster and more net positive for Ethereum's long-term competitiveness. So I don't think it's horrible. Short term, it doesn't look great. But it's probably the right way. Who was the company recently? Was it like Coinbase or something that cut like 2,000 jobs? And I was like, yeah, off the cuff.
Did. Coinbase did. Robinhood cut some jobs the other week. Teams are trimming. They're getting trim.
Yeah, I don't think they're bagging out on their thesis or the investment, but they're trimming a little bit and they're refocusing on the core protocol. And the Ethereum Foundation, I think, probably needs to do that. I hate to see people lose their job or any sort of cutting of any sort of employment, but I'm gonna hope it's the right move. I did not read Vitalik's entire post here. I should have, but it did seem he's just always pushing that decentralized ethos. You know, it's kind of classic, his classic, you know, point of view with decentralization.
Yeah, I guess some of the, he's saying like, hey, we're not saying that we're losing, you know, he's like a lot of times the summary of what I read was the like, hey, usually companies say we're cutting back and, you know, we're not losing anything, you know, we're moving forward, our team got too quote unquote bloated. I don't think he's really saying that. He's saying, hey, there's some stuff that we will be missing, but the deficit over here, this line, the deficit will be recovered through more work happening outside the EF, but not all. So what are the grand sacrifices that will enable leaner effort to accomplish all of this? And then he kind of goes in like, hey, here's what we'll be accomplishing more with a leaner effort. But what we are losing, the deficit will be recovered outside of it, which I thought was really interesting because at this point, you know, when they keep selling their Ethereum, the stakeholders that have been stacking it, like BitMine, SBET, SharpLink, you know, they in a way are becoming new guards to the system, right? And kind of if they're going to donate money or invest in different companies to build out the network, there's more arms to this thing, which I guess is referring to that Vitalik tweet. So here's what I saw is BitMine and SharpLink and Ethereum co-founder Joe Lubin back a nonprofit ETH Labs research group to accelerate Ethereum development and institutional adoption. So that's exactly what he was referring to, is like, hey, there's a lot of stakeholders outside of EF that are going to be helping guide us into the future. And it's been interesting to cover the alchemy of 5% for BitMine. They're basically almost there. SharpLink, I rescheduled their CIO. He's coming back on the pod in a couple weeks, so we'll get a cool update with them, and we'll bring up this tweet, ETH Labs, to get a deep dive on it. But again, there's a new era of kind of Ethereum stakeholders, and I think this is part of that process.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly interesting to see how this is all going to shake out here for Ethereum and what they're building. You know, I think you addressed it great.
Yeah, and just I thought this was interesting. WorldCoin going live on Robinhood. WorldCoin had some interesting backers. Wasn't that the one with Sam Altman?
Yeah, scanning your eyes for $50. I think that was it, right?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I mean, we tried to ask Robinhood, Johan Kerbot, when he was on, of just like, what's your decision? Like, how do you guys go about choosing what goes on? He's like, there's a bunch of different things. Obviously, momentum's one if people are talking about it. But there's a number of different things that go into it. So I don't know. I just thought that was interesting. I was like, why would WorldCoin go live now? I wonder if there's something that we don't know, you know?
Yeah, I mean, listing on a major retail-friendly platform obviously expands the accessibility and liquidity, but it's certainly an interesting time for it to come about. I was never a big WorldCoin guy because that whole scanning of your eyeball just, you know, I was like, I don't know. I don't really want that done. Would you get your eyeball scanned for $50?
Probably not.
Yeah, especially not on your birthday. Who knows what will come back?
Yeah, you'd have to throw in like a cheesesteak or something. So we got some BitTensor news. BitTensor was the bell of the ball AI-wise at the beginning of the year, and then definitely momentum faded a little bit. But back in the news here, what are you reading into it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, bell of the ball is a great way to put it. Then we had some subnets saying that they were too centralized, and now they're trying to push forward to a level of decentralization. So it's a rare level of transparency and honesty from the leadership. And I absolutely love that they're acknowledging the move fast while centralized. But the path of laying out the concrete milestones builds a lot of credibility. And if they deliver on the roadmap, BitTensor could become one of the stronger, more decentralized AI incentive networks. I think this is slightly bullish for BitTensor or the TAL token long term. It looks like they're trying to move to a more decentralized model. And that was one of the knocks that they had from one of their subnets, that they were too centralized. So it looks like the leadership took that to heart. And now they're looking to revamp it slightly. So I like BitTensor. I like TAL. So I'm definitely going to be paying a little bit closer attention to how this is all going to shake out over the next few months.
Good. And we'll cover it here for you guys for sure. Let's see. Oh, man. Of course, they're signing me out of my Crypto 101 podcast account as I'm trying to pull up the sheet on my Drive Classic Live live content here. Signed back in. Oh, Jared from Subway. Oh my God, the world famous, well known MevBot.
This guy.
Take it away, Brian. This is your department.
Well, I guess we should talk about like where this name comes from. Jared from Subway. He's alluding to it being a sandwich attack. It's when a MevBot sparks a large pending trade from a regular user, and that bot will quickly buy right before the user's pushing. If it pushes the price up, and lets the user's trade execute at a worse price, then it immediately sells right after, pushing the price down, and the regular trader gets what they call sandwiched and loses money in slippage while that bot profits. It's a unique way to do it. I'm sure I've been sandwiched from Jared in the past as well, but he had about $15 million in his wallet, and it got drained in really a sophisticated kind of honeypot style exploit that tricked the automatic logic into approving malicious contracts. And then this even took another take where I think hopefully I get this all right here. So that's what happened. Jared from Subway loses $15 million, but a lot of people in the industry are like, "Hey, you kind of got what you deserved because you were like kind of screwing regular users for so long, and that was like $15 million of their own money." I don't have too big of a take there. I don't love it. But then I believe this was yesterday, he came out and he said he was going to give a white hat bounty of $7.5 million if anybody could recover it. And then there was I think it was like the MetaMask.eth user, it's not the actual account, kind of attacked him. And he basically was like, you can't do anything, called him all these names. He's like, you can't, this isn't illegal. He's like, what are you going to do, dox yourself? I bet that's the last thing you want to do. Just take it and eat it. You lost the money. So it's really interesting. But this is a very well-known ETH name. And he lost $15 million in this exploit. It sucks. But it's certainly kind of making its way around the timeline right now.
It ended up being 15. It says 7.5 here.
I thought it was 15 and he was offering 7.5. Maybe I got that a little wrong. I thought it was 15. He was offering 7.5 for the actual, if anybody could help recover it. But long story short, he lost millions of freaking dollars, and not a lot of people are crying over what he lost.
Okay, so Jared from Subway was an interesting character who made money in an interesting way. So we don't feel bad for this guy, I guess, is the summary of it. And that is one expensive footlong, 7.5 mil. Whether it's 7.5 or 15, it's an expensive footlong for $5 friend of the show.
The $5 footlong got a little bit more expensive.
That's some wild inflation.
Yeah, I'm kind of doing it appears that after the fact, saying closer to 15, they're saying the stolen amount was, so it was being reported at 15. That's what I know. Now it's saying the stolen amount was closer to 7.5. So he at least lost 7.5, with the operator claiming the total losses were closer to 15 million. So he lost a lot, dude. Long story short, but I don't know. I'm not losing sleep. I would feel horrible if this was like just a regular user who was absolutely attacked, but you know, he was preying on, you know, the regular retail users for too long. It is what it is. I don't have much of a take other than it was definitely an interesting story that's been floating around.
Interesting. I guess we could wrap up. I thought it'd be cool to wrap up some SpaceX talks. So today, up 5% on the 5-day, down 40%. I'm sorry, 20%. Overall, basically traded back even to its IPO price, which credits us. We kind of called. We were like, hey, if you want to trade this thing out of the gate, probably some opportunity there. But I think, you know, long term, you know, maybe it's a buy, maybe it's not. You got to do your own research there. It's a fascinating company with an interesting balance sheet and revenue when it comes to profitability, for sure. You got to do your research there. But we nailed it on this show, which I am pretty proud of, because we said, hey, out of the gate here, there's going to be some volatility. There's definitely some trading opportunity, especially if you could get those pre-IPO shares. But once it starts trading, yeah, there's going to be a little bit, definitely some exit liquidity, and those lockups haven't even really started yet. So maybe more pressure. Maybe this is fair value for long-term holders. We'll have to see. Any insights into SpaceX, Brian? Any especially around like the tokenized stocks? Any news on all that stuff that you've been following?
Yeah, I mean, this was like the talk of the town for like a couple of weeks there, the SpaceX IPO. I know Joe was heavily involved in it. I was watching very closely. I mean, this thing ran up to like $220 on an absolute rocket ship up, and it's slowly bleeding back. Credit to us. I think we called this out pretty correctly because we knew there was a low float. I think it was like 4.55% initially, and there's naturally some sell-off. But I think the big unlocks come, I believe it's at 3 months. So in three months or 2.5 months from now, we could see another leg down. I would not be shocked by that in by any means. I do really like SpaceX. I think they're doing some really unique things. I think it could be a very interesting stock to hold. I have zero exposure to it. My whole plan was to kind of just watch this, you know, play out, especially because we have some two big IPOs coming up this year as well. We got OpenAI and Anthropic coming out, which is going to get some attention as well. And maybe I'll dabble in that. But a lot of these initial IPOs, a lot of people point to Facebook initially, is that you can see, you know, that initial spike up, then it just kind of bleeds out for 6 months all the way to a year, year and a half. And then, you know, it slowly starts to go up. So obviously people who got in at pre-IPO are going to probably insta-sell right around that three-month mark. I'll be watching it closely because I'd like to get some exposure. I wouldn't be surprised if we're lower than this in 3 months from now. What's your take there?
That was always my thought. I didn't get a ton. I think I got like 50 shares or something. It was a couple grand. And then I sold it at 200. I thought that blow off top was 225 and then it crashed down to 200. I was like, hey, I'm up 70% here. Like, let's take that. And I got dinged because I did it on Robinhood. And it's like, hey, if you sell this after within 30 days, you get like blackballed from future IPOs for 90 days or something. And I was like, I don't know. I just feel like this is going to go back down to its IPO price eventually with the unlocks. And so sold it, took the nice little profit. We'll take it. And that's what I said on the show, was like, hey, if this thing blows up or pops off, I'm selling. And I think there's more selling pressure to come. Now, here's the thing I don't, and open and honest, is just like, I don't know what fair value is because it's not a profitable company. It has interesting profitable things. It has XAI, profitable space, not SpaceX, Starlink. Starlink is a great internet brand that I think is going to really take off. They have so many pieces of it. I think, and then you got to think, so the way I might play this, and again, this is not personal financial advice. This is just a couple friends here talking trading and crypto and stocks. I feel like the play might be to sprinkle, so they'd be like, whatever money you want to invest, this is long term. So I'm thinking like this, I might even do this in like an IRA, like a tax-free IRA. And so what I think I'm going to do is put a chunk of change in to an IRA and just buy like weekly right now is SpaceX and Tesla, the same amount each week. And the hopes would be that Tesla is going to get acquired by SpaceX. And so you could, I think if that happens, SpaceX trades off a little bit, but Tesla would go up a lot, probably, I don't know, 20, 30, 40%. If the number of that deal went through, and then that's the merge you're waiting for. And then that, it's just like a future. It's a futuristic company. Like, I think it's like 100 times earnings. So like, what are you really buying? You're buying a call option on Elon Musk and rockets, which is awesome. It's rockets, robots, AI, and Musk. It's like, that's what it is. So I think in the short term of like a year to 2 years, it's going to be a liquidity instrument. It's like, hey, bull market, pile in, bear market. That's going to be one of the first things people are going to sell. And then you got to factor in the lockups where it's like, hey, if you've been in this thing 5-10 years and you know, have astronomical gains, you're going to take some off the table for sure. Just from a position sizing thing. Like, I think some of these funds are going to keep a lot of money in it, but like, you got to position size it.
Yeah, I love that. I love that take. I don't have any exposure to SpaceX, but I'm going to start after these unlocks kind of go through and where the price settles. I think I'm going to take a similar approach to you, and I'll just start dollar cost averaging again, almost how I treat my Bitcoin bag. You know, I'm not sweating the 5, 10%, 20%, 40% drawdowns because I'm so bullish on it long term. I am bullish that where SpaceX can go long term, but I think there's a little bit more bleed out we can see. And then I kind of just want to slowly acquire a bag. And then you almost like forget about it for a few years.
Yeah.
You know?
It feels like an IRA play. Like, again, I can't give anybody personal financial advice. It feels like if you're buying this thing, you have to want to hold it for, you know, it's like a Bitcoin almost. It's a cycle. It's a 5. It's a 10. I mean, this is just something you're saying, hey, this is either going to work or it's not. And if it does work, then yeah, I guess the profitability of this thing is, you know, never ending. It's creating a whole new industry, just like Tesla did at the time, right? I mean, Tesla became the absolute, I guess it's fair to say that this is a fact, like the best business of battery powered electric cars, the only one that kind of survived, because it was electric only. I think, you know, other companies like a Ford or GM, they started either they have some ones that work. I think the hybrid ended up being the most profitable for those legacy car companies. But then a lot of the legacy ones put all this money into the EV, and then they're bagging it. They're like, yeah, we're not doing it anymore. So, you know, Tesla kind of proved that, you know, it had the wherewithal. Now, obviously, the debate is, you know, the bears say Tesla's a car company. The bulls say, no, it's an AI robotics company. So it's going to be a similar bear bull for SpaceX. The bears are going to be like, what is this? The rockets? Like, it's not profitable. And the bulls are going to say, hey, we're literally going to the moon. So it'll be a fun one. It'll be a fun one to watch and cover.
Another, just to put one more bullet point on that, just a tough fade for me. You know, I can't, like, I want to get in on it. I just want to have some exposure because this is like what I'm built for. It's like a little bit risky asset that could go to the moon. And it really tough for me to look back and, like, let's say this is trading at $1,000 a share 5-8 years from now. And I'm telling my kids, oh, yeah, I was doing weekly podcasts talking about SpaceX. How much did you buy? I'm like, zero. Like, just can't do that. So I'm gonna have to DCA into it, but I'm also a believer in what they could do and want some exposure.
Well, Spin Zone, that's what I said about Tom Lee and Ethereum, and that has not played out so far. Still riding, still holding.
Yeah,
that's exactly what I said. I was like, I can't be talking about this guy every week and not be a part of it after he went on national television forever when Bitcoin was under, you know, $5,000 a coin, pounding the table as a buy. So. Good point. I just think the number one thing I talked about this, but we didn't pull this up since it's been live, is, you know, listen, SpaceX is a top 10 company by market cap, and it was on day one. So again, when the people that made life-changing money, they bought NVIDIA when it was way off. It wasn't even on this list. It was a video game company. And then now the video game chips turned into AI chips, and it rocketed up. Again, you could have go back in time and buy Alphabet, Google at the time, Apple, Microsoft years and years ago, Amazon when Jeff Bezos was selling books, and you ride it to what it's become. That's when you pick up these companies that are in the Russell 2000 and they make their way up to the top 10 by market cap, that's how you have those life-changing gains. But it takes years to get there. I just think with SpaceX, there's a whole nother different side to this conversation of, like, companies not going public until they're fully matured. And you're going to see that with Anthropic and OpenAI later in the year. Those companies are going to IPO, and they're going to be somewhere in this top 15, top 20 is my guess as well, if not top 10 maybe. So it's a new era of investing. And other than that, I don't have a solid take. I think other than this thing can't really is a famous last words. I just don't think SpaceX could really double, triple, quadruple in the near term, just because it's just not profitable. Like, it's just, the future earnings don't make sense.
Agreed. Can't wait to dollar cost average in on in a few months.
Yeah. And it's not a low enough market cap to truly become like a meme coin, you know? So it's like there's factors to the summary of what I'm trying to say is you can be bullish on it long term, but there's factors to being a top 10 company by market cap that if you're not educated on that, you don't understand what market cap is and you're just buying it blindly. You need to do a little bit of understanding of what you're buying. And when the market caps are so high, it takes a lot more to move that price.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love your take. I love your take about SpaceX possibly acquiring Tesla. I think that's
that'd be a nice one to clip.
That's not a non-zero chance. I just wanted to say it here too, so I could clip myself a year from now. I'm like, hey, I was in on it too. It wasn't just TiVo.
Hey, we need another. The podcast needs another great clip. I mean, we did Robin Hood years ago. We've had some winners, obviously, inside the community and on the podcast. With, you know, Hyperliquid was huge for us, and some others. So. We have winners along the way, but yeah, it's nice to get a storyline right. So I'm excited to see how that one will work out. We'll clip it if we need be. But other than that, we'll wrap up. I got to wrap. Thank you guys for the birthday wishes in the chat. Matt coming through with a super chat.
Oh, wow.
A birthday super chat. That's unbelievable. He says he appreciates the good live info we provide, you know, each week. So thank you, Matt. Really appreciate it. Thank you all for the birthday wishes. Give this video a thumbs up, everybody. And subscribe if you're new. And then obviously check the links below to be a part of the community. We got Brian's $1 trial there every time he comes on the show. It's a good time to get into the community, get involved, because again, I think there's long-term upside here. So you want to get as much information as you can. We'll be back Friday with Brian. I'm sorry, Brian's here today. We'll be back Friday with Brendan and Hunter. So that'll be a fun show. Thank you all as always. That's all for today. We'll talk to you next time. Bye, everybody.